All right, let's get started. Good evening, everybody. My name is Kai Unkroot. I'm a program manager in the analysis services team. Oops, I'm shooting too fast here. With focus on the integration pieces between our clients and our engines, which is, for example, PowerPivot for SharePoint. That's one of the areas that I work with and define the features and work with the developers and testers. And today I would like to talk about how to deploy a BI, a self-service BI environment, which is primarily about PowerPivot for SharePoint and PowerView. Just out of curiosity, how many of you already have experience with our BI technologies in SharePoint? Quite a few. Let me ask the other way around. Anybody in the room who is not familiar with SharePoint and all BI technologies? That's one. That is a little bit of a 300 level deep dive session into certain areas of the SharePoint deployments and the PowerPivot hurdles that sometimes make the life a little difficult. So those of you who are not really familiar with the SharePoint environment, the overview part ends at my first demo. If you feel that this covers it for what you are interested in, then feel free to leave and go to another session. Remember, I'm the only one in here who must be here. You guys can leave at any time. What I would like to do today is give you not just an explanation how to deploy PowerPivot for SharePoint in SharePoint 2013, but also to give you the deep insight into the architecture and how our nuts and bolts work so that you understand, can understand better why certain things behave the way they behave, why some things are difficult and tricky, and sometimes also to get quicker to a root cause of a problem that prevents you from really deploying the environment successfully. How many of you think that our deployment story is a good experience? No, there's not a single hand going up. We hear that quite often, that our customers are not really happy with the complexity of our products and the deployment story in general. We are trying to improve it with every release. In SQL Server 2008 R2, which was the first release of PowerPivot for SharePoint, we had high ambitions. We wanted to make everything brilliantly easy. We had a setup mode in SQL Server setup that allowed you to deploy an entire SharePoint environment with our PowerPivot product. And we thought that was really cool, and we thought that customers really liked that, except it completely backfired on us. And we learned later that the SharePoint product group had really good reasons to keep the setup part and the configuration part separate. You have deployed SharePoint, you know that you first lay down the bits, and then you have a separate configuration tool to actually configure your farm or join a server to a farm. And the reason for that is that the SharePoint infrastructure, when you deploy your solutions, is actually relatively asynchronously working behind the back. And if you have a server not working or not running, a SharePoint server, then the configuration slash deployment fails, even though it isn't necessarily a true error condition. It's just a temporary glitch. But when we had the entire experience in setup, our setup, when it encounters a solution deployment failure, it raises an error to you and says, hey, a failure, I want to roll back, and it can't roll back because that server or that timer's job that was running in the farm is not available. And so you end up with these very weird intermediary stages where you have the bits on the server but not deployed in SharePoint, and SQL setup can't handle it because the next time you try to run it, it will tell you that the bits are already there and you don't know how to get back to a clean stage. In SQL Server 2012, we took that into consideration and we changed the design of setup so that setup only lays down the bits. And then we have a separate configuration tool that you run to actually deploy our PowerPivot components inside SharePoint. That was a good step forward, but we still have a lot of complexity. So we took the opportunity when it came to SharePoint 2013 to take a different spin on our integration. make Excel services a core part of our architecture. And so we enabled a different light-up story that allows you to deploy our product in stages. And I'm going to talk about that in a moment in more detail. And we also moved the analysis server out of the farm environment. In SharePoint 2010, every PowerPivot server runs two services, the PowerPivot system service and the SQL Server analysis services server. Now in SharePoint 2013, we don't have that AS server anymore on the SharePoint box. And that, again, required us to tweak SQL setup because in the release in the RTM version of SQL Server 2012, we checked whether setup checked whether you were running it in SharePoint mode on a server that had the SharePoint bits installed. And in SQL Server 2012 Service Pack 1, which is our release that is in sync with SharePoint 2013, we disabled all these checks. Well, it turned out that as part of the release of SQL Server 2012 Service Pack 1, there was a glitch in the release cycle, and so a corrupted or bad installation media was initially published that actually contained the RTM bits but pretended it was a Service Pack 1. So if you have that media still flying around somewhere in your organizations, you run SQL Server setup, you believe it's Service Pack 1, and if it complains at all about a wrong SharePoint version or any SharePoint version, you know you have a bad media, and then you just need to download that service pack again. Before we go into the entire setup story, a quick review. I think you are all very much familiar with it. Of the main components in our BI stack on the desktop, we have Excel 2013 now, where the power users get to create their own analysis. At that level, it's still personal BI. I get to create whatever I want, get my answers. But then I want to share it with you, and then what options do I have? The first option is I send it to you in an email. Of course, if I do that, then I have it kind of difficult to maintain updates to my solutions or ensure that the data in the solutions that I share with you is up to date, because the data is all imported into the PowerPivot workbook. And PowerPivot for SharePoint offers you a great solution to automate these refreshes, but when you share it directly in an email, you don't have the ability to maintain a central copy. That is where the SharePoint environment comes into the picture. With SharePoint, when you deploy our stack, which consists out of SharePoint 2013 Enterprise, our PowerPivot for SharePoint add-in, and reporting services PowerView, you get an environment where you not only can share the workbooks easily, but where you can actually build additional solutions on top of it. And this is my little slide with some color coding to highlight the capabilities that you get. Browser interactivity I have highlighted in a goldenish color to symbolize that you get this out of the box with SharePoint 2013. You don't need to install any BI features in your SharePoint farm. The reason we did this was that we wanted to enable enterprise organizations specifically to provide at least a basic level of BI services in every SharePoint farm that exists in the organization. And it is often the case that SharePoint administrators don't want to install yet another technology in their farms, especially when it's a complex technology like BI. So even in the largest farms, you don't have to deploy anything within the farm. This administrator that doesn't want to deploy anything in addition to what SharePoint 2013 provides can be quite happy with that. All you need to deploy now is a separate AS server outside of that SharePoint environment. Could be a SQL Server admin that deploys this AS box, or a couple of AS boxes, or a number of AS boxes. And then all that SharePoint administrator has to do is register these services in the Excel services configuration, and then users get to enjoy a browser interactivity. They can open a workbook, and they can also see and slicers and so forth. Then a different feature that we have, and I will demo that in a moment, is workbooks as a data source. When you have a workbook deployed in SharePoint, then you can actually use this workbook as if it was an analysis services database. Because the truth is, there is an AS database somewhere and our technology provides the capabilities to connect to that workbook simply by specifying the URL of the workbook as the server name. There's a slight different color between that box and the other boxes because workbooks as a data sources is already immediately available to you within the farm. So, for example, if you build SharePoint services that use AS to query it, a custom solution, that would work right away. But outside the farm, that path is not yet available because you need a component that we ship with our Power Pivot for SharePoint add-in. So these two, the browser interactivity and workbooks as a data source inside the farm, these two components work right away with as soon as you have an AS server registered. And for those administrators that want to go the next step to enable more capabilities, we have on one side PowerView, reporting services PowerView. You run SQL setup again, deploy reporting services PowerView in your farm. And because workbooks as a data source already works inside the farm, PowerView has everything that it needs, and you can render PowerView reports on top of PowerPivot workbooks. And you can also render embedded PowerView reports at that stage that are directly integrated into the Excel workbook. And the rest of these boxes comes with our PowerPivot add-in, which is now a separate download from the feature pack. It's an MSI that you can install on your SharePoint servers because you don't have the AS server necessarily on your SharePoint servers anymore, so you don't really run SQL Server setup on these machines. So there's this separate MSI that you can install. It comes with a new configuration tool for SharePoint 2013, and it will deploy all the features necessary to provide users with the capabilities to schedule data refreshes, to give them the BISM link files as a means to simplify how to connect to a data source, an AS data source, our gallery, and our management dashboard. I will show them later. And that is what we call, what I just explained with these levels, that is what we call the BI light-up story for SharePoint 2013. So you start at the bottom with a basic SharePoint 2013 farm, and then at level two, it gets interesting. You deploy your AS server somewhere. It can be on the SharePoint server. There's nothing preventing that. It doesn't have to be anymore. And then you go up. Three and four are interchangeable. You can deploy the add-in first and then reporting services or the other way around. It usually makes sense to deploy them together. If you deploy reporting services, why would you not want to deploy the PowerPivot add-in? So let me show you. That is my first demo. Let me show you the SharePoint experience. What I'm going to first demo to you or show you is my test environment or demo environment that I have here to work and provide or show you all the features we have. This is in SQL. This is in Windows Azure. I have four VMs here. I have a separate domain controller, which is my DC. Oops, let's go back. My domain controller is this DC. Nah, this keeps jumping in there. I just want to select it. And there. Then I have a SQL server for my configuration databases and my content databases. I have a separate analysis services server running in SharePoint mode. And then I have a SharePoint server. I only have one. That was enough for me here to demo what I want to show. How do you set up an analysis services server in SharePoint mode? This here is a blank Windows Server 2012 virtual machine that I just created. And as I mentioned, we disabled all the software checks that search for SharePoint versions on this machine. There is no SharePoint version. There's nothing on this machine, as you can see. It's very blank here. So I go into my setup. No, I need to aim better. And setup goes through its normal routines. You select installation. A new SQL Server, standalone version. Occasionally, customers ask, can I deploy this AS server in the back in a failover cluster? And the answer is no, this is not supported for the SharePoint deployment mode, simply because it doesn't make sense. Excel services load balances the servers already for you, and a failover cluster is not a lossless failover. You have some downtime in between too, so Excel services does that much better, uses the resources better by just using standalone machines. I come to the scale out of farms just in a moment. So setup first checks for its own files, whether there are updates, and then gives me my usual screen where I can select the installation modes. And this is just here for the update real quick. I hope that goes fast. And then you will see that setup screen, and in case you wonder why we have the SharePoint version still as a separate node here, that comes out of our history that we once wanted to have a full-blown SharePoint installation for PowerPivot. That's a legacy, if you will, that we still have that separate mode. It has a few quirks in it, and it's important to point these out. The first one is this checkbox to select the relational engine as well as the AS server. That makes total sense for you to select this option if this is, for example, a test environment where you say, yeah, I'll host my content DBs and my AS server on the same machine. Then you select it that way. I, however, in this environment, did not deploy the relational engine on this box. This is just an AS server. Let's go back. So I deselected this option. What happens, however, when I, and that gives me a clean machine, but what happens when you deselect this option, because we thought we are really smart and make the selections for you, we also deselected the management tools. And as you see, we were really smart. We thought we had everything figured out, and so we thought you'd never want to add another feature. That's why we disabled here any options for you to change things, so you don't get the management tools when you only select to install AS. That can be quite a bummer. So you deploy just this one mode, and then you have to run SQL setup a second time, and then you go through the normal installation path, and you select the management tools. Another way to do this is you say, okay, I'll install the relational engine together with it. And then later I just deactivate that service. As you can see, when you install the relational engine, then you get our management tools. And then you can manage that server. In my test environment here that I have in the cloud, I just said, that's fine with me because I have a SQL server here and I will do my management from that machine. I will just remote connect to my AS server. So I didn't bother running SQL setup a second time. Let me deselect that one to stay focused on AS. You just select next here, and then basically the AS-specific configuration pages will show up. And there's one that is very important for you. I'll show you that in a moment. The instance name is by default PowerPivot. No reason to change that here for me. And I believe the next screen is the important one. No, not that one. This one. With analysis services now outside of the farm, you are free to choose any service account that you want. It doesn't have to be a domain account. In fact, it can be the network service too. Yep. And that is quite nice for some deployments. But there are some features, and I will point them out later, specifically an interactive refresh of a workbook, which will not work when you select a low-privileged account like a network service. It has to do with authentication. We come to that. Here's that other important page, the server configuration page, where you specify who a server admin is on that machine. PowerPivot in itself in this server scenario has no security. Because we say the user has the right to access this workbook in SharePoint. Therefore, that user also has the right to access the data model that is contained within that workbook. So we don't need any user permissions on that AS server. But the user isn't actually accessing this data model in the first place. It is a BI service such as PowerView or Access Services that is accessing this data model. And in order to enable that service to act on behalf of that user, and in order for us to avoid Kerberos constrained delegation configuration requirements, which would add yet another configuration complexity, we have a special command that's called setAuthContext, which a BI service can send to a PowerPivot server. It only works in PowerPivot mode and the SharePoint mode. But it requires that the service that is setting that context to be a server admin. So here in the screen, you need to add not just the current user, if you want this environment to work, you also need to add all the SharePoint service accounts that you have in the farm that connects to that machine. If that service is not a SharePoint, an AS admin, then you will not be able to connect. We'll come to troubleshooting these kinds of things in a moment. Okay. I'm just adding myself here. I'm running as administrator. I'm not going through the whole installation. It takes a while. One other aspect to mention here on this page, I'm switching back real quick, is the data directories. If you have a decent production server, it is most likely that you want to move your data directory to a different drive than the drive of the operating system. But keep in mind that disk I/O performance is less important for us on PowerPivot because it's an in-memory technology. When we load a workbook data model up, it is all in memory. We hardly ever go to disk. Yep, and then we can go through the remaining steps, and there's the summary screen, and at this point, when you click install, it starts running. I don't need to finish this. I have my other test environment. I just wanted to show you. Here's how you walk through the setup. Can we wait with the questions to the end? Okay. Okay. So this is the installation of an AS server. Let me now also show you how you actually register that server inside your SharePoint environment. And for that, I need to switch to my other machine here. This is my SharePoint server in the cloud. Yes. My central admin. I have a SharePoint environment here that is already configured, of course, but I can still show you where it's configured. Basically, in central administration, you go to the Excel Services service, and there within the service application settings, there is a new section called BI Servers. So I go to Manage Service Applications. I'm actually impressed how fast it is. It appears to be slow, maybe, but it's actually in the data center on the West Coast. So I was a bit concerned that it would work at all, but I'm quite impressed. So here I'm going into the Excel Services configuration, and there is my data model settings part. And here you can register one or multiple servers. Very simple text box here. You specify your server. What's to keep in mind on that text box? There's again a gotcha that can be tricky. If you're familiar with SQL, we have these fancy shortcuts like a period for the local machine or localhost slash. Those kinds of cool shortcuts you shouldn't be using in here. They would work, but if you have a multiple server farm environment, then the localhost would mean something different on every machine. That wouldn't be so clever. Another issue that we see quite often is that customers are forgetting that a PowerPivot server usually has the instance name PowerPivot in it. So don't just specify the server name, then you will not be able to connect to that machine. Yeah, that's pretty much all that the SharePoint server at the basic level requires to provide services at the basic BI level. Browser interactivity works. Let's move on. What else is great about the fact that we don't have AS anymore in the SharePoint farm is that it gives you, hopefully, a better TCO. In 2010, every PowerPivot server required an AS server. So if you had, for example, two small farm environments for, let's say, 10 users each, you needed two AS server licenses. Now that is not the case. You can share one AS server between two farms. I would only recommend that for very small environments, but we designed the system in a way that these farms do not conflict with each other. Just a second. So the typical topologies that we have is a single server environment. If you want to demo something to somebody, there you go, one server. Everything can be on it. I would not recommend that even for demos. As you can see, my own environment consists of multiple servers, simply because all these technologies are very hungry for memory. AS can only load as many workbooks as you can stick into memory. SQL Server grabs up to 80% of the memory too. SharePoint / running Excel services on the machine does the same thing, 50% of the memory it likes to call its own. And reporting services PowerView also likes resources. So not the best if you want to show a snappy experience. So the next option is to at least move SQL Server and AS on a separate machine. The other option is to share an AS server between multiple farms. And the third is, of course, the large farm environment, where you have multiple SharePoint servers that use perhaps multiple AS servers in the back to load models. And you just register them in the ECS configuration. By the way, when I say ECS, I mean Excel services. It's Excel calculation services correctly. And ECS uses all these servers happily, load distributes the load. And it's also easy to scale out, because scale out means now that you just add another AS server. When is scale out necessary? You will see this in your environments. If users increasingly start using PowerPivot workbooks in the farm, the backend fills up. Excel services does not unload a model just because the user disconnects. Well, we try to be fast. The user connects and interacts with the workbook. Excel services will load the model. The user interacts and is happy. Excel services keeps the model loaded. The user closes the browser and goes away. Excel services will keep that model around for, I believe the default is 1 day. And that can be an issue when you have a busy community and you refresh workbooks as well. Then your backend service will load up. Perhaps with models that are already stale, you can change the configuration in ECS and say, I want a shorter time period. We recommend an hour. That's usually enough, so that ECS unloads models faster. But if that doesn't solve the problem for you, if you notice that users complain quite frequently that they get error messages like the data model cannot be loaded, then look at the management dashboard, which I'll show you later, that shows you the system configuration and consumption. And if you conclude that the backend is under heavy pressure, then it might be time to add yet another server. And no matter how many BI services you have in that farm, the only thing you have to do is add that server to that list of BI servers, and everybody can use it. We'll come to the system architecture in a moment. But how do you make sure that an AS server that you configure is actually usable? A good mistake that you might make is that you deploy a tabular server, and then you say, hey, I have my AS server here. Why don't I just register that one in ECS? Yes, you have a standalone server, and yes, you have ECS, but they both don't fit together. That server must run in SharePoint mode so that these funny commands that we have to set the user context actually work. And Tabular doesn't support these things. So we have implemented in Excel services some routines that check whether that server is available and so forth. There's a, let me go back to this machine here. When you go to our team blog, which is blogs.msdn.com/powerpivot, I've written a few articles about how to check the configuration. Here, for example, I explain to you how our modules that we have in Excel services today advertise themselves in the ULS logs. And for example, here, I hope you can see it. Let me zoom in a little bit. Where's my zoom there? There. These are the checks that you should be able to see in the ULS logs, or the other way around, if there is a configuration mistake, then you will see a longer error message that will tell you what's wrong. This basically means we check the server configuration, which means we are running in SharePoint mode versus any other mode. We check whether the service account has access to the Excel services service accounts, that server admin privilege. And we check the build number to make sure that you are not trying to get us a pre-SP1 server into this configuration, because we changed how PowerPivot loads data models. In PowerPivot in SharePoint 2010, the PowerPivot system service grabs the workbook out of the content database, puts it to the local file system, and sends an image load command to the AS server and says, here's a workbook, would you please load it? And AS does that. We don't do that anymore in 2013. In 2013, Excel Services grabs the workbook, opens it up, gets the data model out, and actually sends it, embeds it into the image load command, and sends that to the AS server. That's why the AS server no longer has to be in that farm, because we sent that data model over, wherever that server is. Of course, data models can get quite large, so it is highly recommended that you have a fast network connection between that ECS box and the AS server. I also explain a little bit here in this blog article some commands. I'm sure if you are SharePoint administrators, you have your own favorite ULS viewer or ULS troubleshooting tools. Here, for example, I have a commandlet that I can run on my... In this blog article, I have multiple of these commands that I show for certain types of information that you can extract. For example, I can run this command directly here in my... my management shell. I have quite a few ULS logs, so it will take some time to finish it. Oops, no, that's the wrong command. Paste. There. It takes some time because I'm using this demo environment for quite some time, but eventually it will give me some entries. That there are occasional when I shut down the AS server, and so sometimes in the ULS logs it complains then that it doesn't have access to the AS server. I will switch back to that later. So there are these ways that you can check in the ULS logs whether your machine works properly. Another one is, of course, the tried and proven method of just going and opening your workbook up. For example, let me go, let me just open another page here. You just open a PowerPivot workbook. Note that at this point, the data model is not yet loaded, simply because Excel services will give you the data out of the workbook cache. That's also one of those little tricky things when you think you want to verify the configuration. Oh, yeah, you see this also, system works, nope. You haven't proven anything yet. You first need to also go and click on a slicer or interact with that data to see whether this really works. And if my data changes, then yes, indeed. Now I know for sure that this works. Of course, I can also go to my configuration. Let me cancel this out. To my systems, to my SQL Server Management Studio, connect to that AS server and look at the data models that are loaded. And I will show you what the data model name looks like now. As I mentioned, we now support multiple farms loading data models on the same server. So we had to do some tricky things with the naming conventions. Well, this one is loading up. Let's see if my app server is now giving me something back here. Yep, here we have some errors already. For example, in this one, it says a connection couldn't be made here in this. Not good, not very readable, but anyway. That was on the 13th of this month, for example. All right, let's bring this Management Studio up. Here I'm connecting to my AS server. And there are my databases that I have interacted with lately. And as you can see, let's take, for example, this one. These names are quite long. The last four characters stand for Streaming Server Pool Module, which is our little component inside Excel Services that does all the magic for you. All the loading of the models, these funny checks where we have in the ULS logs, these checks, that's all SSPM work. The SSPM also chooses the name for your database. When we go from back to front, the first GUID from right to left is a random GUID, so you will never really know what the database name is up front. You first have to go to ECS and ask for ECS to load that model. The second GUID is the service instance ID of Excel services in SharePoint. And that one is a unique ID that guarantees us that that ECS instance can always find its own data models on the AS server. So when you restart a SharePoint server, what ECS will do, it will go and check on all the AS servers that are registered, which data models did it have loaded, and it will unload all these data models at that time. So ECS will always start from a clean slate. We also have some performance optimizations in PowerPivot in comparison to the tabular mode, where we violate the transaction-oriented processing principles, this ATOM principle, where we need to always make sure that a transaction is truly completed, which also implies you have to persist it on disk so that in case of a failure or a sudden loss or crash, that the transaction is not lost. We don't do that in PowerPivot anymore. In PowerPivot, we are saying the model is the one single source of the truth, and that model comes from a workbook, and it is loaded every time a user wants it. So when we restart our server, we will also wipe the entire data folder. You restart that AS server, and these models will be gone. And that's okay for us because Excel Services can restream that model anytime it needs to. That way, we were able to say, okay, forget transaction-oriented processing, because we're going to apply the transaction in memory. We'll be fast. We can complete faster. Back to PowerPivot gives a snappier experience that way. Life is better. We don't need to really make sure that this database is always consistent. It's quite a different story for tabular mode databases than for PowerPivot mode databases. Another performance optimization we have in SharePoint 2013 versus what we had in SharePoint 2010 is the communication protocol. The SharePoint services now talk TCP/IP and on top of it our DIME and then XMLA, whereas in the old architecture the communication was done over WCF, which is more a bulkier application level protocol. It doesn't get any trimmer than TCP/IP for us. So that's about that. And the final piece that we have in our names is the name of the workbook for as much as we can fit in. The database names have a limitation of 100 characters. So if you have a really long workbook name, you don't see the entire name there. Usually you do. And that's that about checking whether your system works. Another good idea, if you're troubleshooting, is to run SQL Profiler against your AS server to see what commands ECS is actually sending. You can figure out quite a bit based on the profiler traces. So I've already talked a lot about, you know, you only need to register things in ECS and then magically all BI services can use this new server. How does it really work? How do all these BI components that we have in a farm interact? The browser here in this case, where's my mouse cursor? The browser in this case would be browser interactivity. That guy goes to Excel Web Access in this case, which goes to Excel Calculation Services, which talks to our funny SSPM module, which will load the data model, and then ECS can query the data model, provided that the service account of ECS is a server admin. Life is good. Let's take an Excel client that actually connects to a Power Pivot workbook as a data source from outside the farm. That guy will go a different path. It will go to our Power Pivot web service, which is part of our add-in. And the reason why external workbooks as a data source requires our add-in, whereas inside the farm you don't need it, because these inside the farm services don't need to go through our web service. So that Excel client here goes to the web service, which will go to the Power Pivot system service. And now we do a funny dance, where we use the ECS APIs that are available to us to ask ECS to please load the model for us. Remember, we don't know which server this ECS service will choose. It can have multiples. We don't know what database name they're going to pick for this thing. But we go to ECS and say, please load us the model somewhere where you find that it is a good idea. And then ECS will return us the server name and the database name, and then we can connect directly. Again, just straight TCP/IP. And because we are going directly, that Power Pivot system service account, if you use different accounts, also needs to be a server admin. Let's take reporting services. Let's take the browser. I should have had a Silverlight client here for PowerView. PowerView goes through the reporting services add-in on the front-end server, which is also installed through SQL setup. There is a separate session on reporting services at this conference. So that client goes through its own add-in on the front-end server and talks to the reporting services shared service application, which wants to render your PowerView report. And guess what? That service uses ADOMD.NET. ADOMD.NET is our data provider in managed code. That one, again, goes to ECS. Oops, I shouldn't click here. Goes to ECS. Please load me my model. Give me back the connection information. Yes, thank you. I'm going to connect directly. And, of course, that also means that the RS service account also needs to be a server admin. And then I have performance point in the picture, too. Let's take this path. Also, there's a front-end component on the front-end servers. Then we have a shared service application. Goes through ADOMD.NET. Goes through the ECS API. By the way, these API dances are completely transparent to the application here on the front side. They only just use our ADOMD.NET data provider. And everything else we'll do in the background. We go, please load, thank you, and so forth. This dance here is a funny one when you have a linked workbook that connects to a Power Pivot workbook, and now you upload that linked workbook also into the farm. Now you open in the browser a linked workbook, and that linked workbook has a data connection to a Power Pivot workbook. Now imagine you have a thin workbook that has a pivot table, right? So now you want to see that data. Again, you're in a browser, Excel Web Access, Excel Calculation Services loads the linked workbook, the thin one, and then sees that there is an MS OLAP connection. MS OLAP is our native code data provider, to a data source, an AS data source, which happens to be a workbook URL. It'll pass that workbook URL to our data provider, and our data provider is smart enough to discover, hey, that linked workbook is also in my local farm, so why don't I pick another Excel calculation service and ask that service to load that model for me? That's this loop back thing here. So we ask them, hey, this is a Power Pivot workbook, please load it. Then we get the connection information, and then we can establish a direct connection to that data model that way too. Long story short, all services go through ECS. Whether they know it or not, doesn't matter to us. And all services connect directly to the Power Pivot server at the end of the day and therefore require admin rights. If you write a custom web part, for example, that connects with ADOMD.NET to a Power Pivot model, then make sure that this service account on the web service is also server admin on the AS box, because that web part will ultimately, at the end of the day, connect to that data model directly. All right. Let's talk a little bit more about the interaction with our data models. I've shown you the architecture, everything goes through, but there is again a little gotcha for you, and that is this ECS API actually sits underneath a library which we call SP Client. And this SP Client library is only available when you download the PowerPivot MSI. You also have the options to install our data providers individually. Like if you write an ADOMD.NET application, you say, I only need ADOMD.NET. Why don't I just download ADOMD.NET from the feature pack and install that? Isn't that enough? No, it is not, because that package does not include that SP Client thing. As you can see here in that screenshot, hopefully, in the list of features that our MSI offers you, we have the three data providers. First one is our MSOLAP, the OLEDB provider. Second one is ADOMD.NET. And the third one is AMO, our analysis management object. But you don't see the SP client because it is a hidden feature that we always install, because you always need it. And then we have the PowerPivot configuration tool, which we also have in this package. It doesn't mean you have to install the configuration tool on every SharePoint server in your farm. If you're only interested in the data providers, then only install the data providers. If you want to deploy PowerPivot at the end of the day, then at least install the configuration tool on one of your SharePoint servers, preferably your central admin host. And then you run this config tool and you deploy PowerPivot, and you only need to do it now on one server. It is no longer required to do it on every SharePoint server because we don't have AS anymore on every PowerPivot server. Now we can truly take advantage of the SharePoint deployment infrastructure, where we deploy our solution files and SharePoint will take care of that and deploy it to all the servers that we have. So there you have it. If this was your farm environment, a bunch of front-end servers and back-end servers, my recommendation, don't look at each individual service and which data provider it needs. Establish one known good server configuration that has all the data providers in it. Whether they are going to be used or not, doesn't matter. Just install all three on every SharePoint server that you have. Front-end, back-end, or application server, doesn't matter. And then consider where you want to install PowerPivot for SharePoint. So let me show you a little bit of a fun demo about workbooks as a data source. I mentioned you can also write your own, and I have done that in PowerShell. Here in this environment, I have an old demo. I have a PowerPivot deep dive together with my colleague Diego Oppenheimer, where he is the Excel PM who I worked with to get this integration done so deeply into Excel services. And he created this PowerPivot workbook with this worksheet where we analyzed Twitter accounts, right? And it looks very fancy. And we were teasing, basically, I was saying, hey, why do you need Excel to display that? I can do the same thing on a PowerShell window. I just type in the same my command here, and it will give me the same thing. How do I do this? Well, I basically just, here's my script. I basically go just into an ADOMD connection. Here's where all the work is done. Look, here you see the workbook path points to the workbook URL, and then I just say, hey, give me an ADOMD connection and just open that one, and then I just send my commands to get my data back, and then the rest is just funny rendering, where I do a bit of a loop here and there to make it look nice. But that is, for example, how Workbooks as a data source works. You don't have to worry about a thing. You specify that URL, and we will connect you, provided that you are a server admin on that machine. Workbooks as a data source is also a great way to verify your system configuration. Let me show you that. Back to our team block. Let me zoom out here for a moment. Yep. So I showed you this article about how to investigate the ULS logs for the system configuration. If you don't like analyzing ULS logs, I have another article here which relies on that spiel of workbooks as a data source, and I just run some PowerShell scripts that try to load a workbook. I look first, is the BI server configured? And then I go through a series of steps, basically, to see, can I connect? Here's, for example, a simple, very easy one. I basically just say, OK, here's a workbook URL. Can I connect? Yes or no? And if I can connect, life is good. Because the moment I connect, I know that ECS has loaded the data model for me. No need to analyze ULS logs. Copy and paste, and you're good. Now let's come to the actual installation of our PowerPivot add-in. At this point, you have an AS server, and you have your SharePoint farm, and you have ECS configured with that BI server name, at least one. And now you say, hey, I want that additional feature such as schedule data refresh. Which of the components do we deploy? They are all in color. The gray ones are the ones that already exist. So when you go and download that as an MSI and you deploy our config tool, and then you actually run that config tool and say, yep, deploy PowerPivot in this farm for me, please, then we will add all these features for you. You still get our system service, even though it is a less important service now. It's not as central anymore because Excel Services does most of the work for us. It still has its role in schedule data refresh and, as you already have seen, in external access to a workbook through our web front end, because that still goes through the system service. We have the management dashboard, which allows you to see what workbooks in your farm your users are actually using and how many of these users are using them and what kind of queries these workbooks generate. And you can also see the schedule data refresh histories and any errors. I'll show you that in a moment. We have our PowerPivot gallery, which we add. Still have our BISM link files and data feed support, a whole collection of timer jobs which we need to feed the data from the ULS log, the usage logs, into our service app DB and then in our management dashboard. And we create our service app DB, which we need to maintain the work queue for schedule data refresh. We changed that too. We made it more hacker friendly. I come to that in a moment. So how do you run this PowerPivot config tool? It's the same, basically, as in SharePoint 2010. There's only one additional node, which I, of course, overlapped here. It's kind of below here somewhere. I'll show a real demo in a moment, where we configure ECS with a list of BI servers. That's an additional node that we have in 2013. And we provide this as a separate tool. If you run this tool in a SharePoint 2010 environment, it will complain wrong SharePoint version. The same if you run the SharePoint 2010 config tool in a SharePoint 2013 environment, it will also say, hey, you are running the wrong config tool. But the principles of these config tools is the same. We thought during the RTM time frame really hard about how do we get out of these setup problems that we had in 2008 R2. And the cleverest idea that we had was this config tool, and we said, you know, why don't we write a tool that actually does nothing? Then we can't get into trouble. And that's what we did. This config tool does nothing. It is just a script executor. The actual workhorse are the scripts, these PS1 things, that are in the installation directory of the config tool and which will also be available to you on the script tab here. So if you want to automate your deployment, you can just take these scripts, make sure that the solution, the farm level solution is deployed, then the scripts can run, because with that farm level solution, we deploy our commandlets. And then you can script away. You don't even have to use that config tool if you don't want to. Sometimes we do run into some problems that are, you know, sometimes we do have bugs sometimes. And so then go and if you don't want to be blocked, just go into that script, see what it actually is doing, and then run that manually and go past that blocker. For example, in a CTP3 beta version of RTM, that's the only one that I ever encountered, we had a bug where we did not escape the dollar sign in the password. So if you had a dollar sign in the password, we never were able to get you through this config tool because the password of the service account was wrong and we would fail. Well, then go and specify it in the script directly, escape it properly, and then continue on. So let me run this config tool here on my machine. This is the part of the demo where I ask you never to do this on a production system because I have already configured here a system that works. I need to basically unconfigure this system. Well, let's run it here. Oh, wait. Going into regedit. There's this key inside SharePoint here, down there, somewhere. It's called secure. This is where the master key for your farm is stored. And if I rename that one, then SharePoint thinks it is no longer in a farm. So that's done. And the last thing that I need to do is go into IIS and rename the admin side, because our config tool looks for that too. And if it sees one, it will not really run. So let me rename that one. And of course, you don't ever do that. It's just for demo. So, and then I can run my config tool, which I have here somewhere. There's my config tool. And if I run this, it'll give me my option to configure a new farm. And then you get the largest list of features possible that we expose. Of course, if you already have a farm and if you have services configured, the tool is smart enough to discover which services you already have. It, for example, will then not give you the option to deploy ECS if ECS is already deployed. Could move a little faster if you ask me, but any moment now. There it is. There's my config tool, where you can specify all the information for your server. In this mode, because it didn't detect a SharePoint farm, we still give you the option to completely configure the farm from scratch. That's also one of those legacy things, because we thought we really want to make life easy for you. But the downside of this approach is that you get actually an insecure farm, because we only ask you for one service account, and we will use that service account everywhere. That will be the farm account, that will be the services account, that will be the farm administrator, basically. So my recommendation, don't use that. How I deploy my environments, and I always do it that way, is I go through the normal SharePoint steps. And at the end of my SharePoint deployment, it asks me with the farm wizard, do you want to provision some services? And the services that I provision are ECS and Secure Store. We need Secure Store for unattended accounts and other such credentials in scheduled data refresh scenarios. And then I let SharePoint just run nicely through. One of the reasons I believe, if I was a customer, is as long as I stay with my SharePoint tools, I can call SharePoint support and get support. If you run with my config tool, we are SQL. SharePoint guys don't necessarily like troubleshooting our tools, and you get into this back and forth between product groups a little bit, perhaps. So configure your farm, make sure SharePoint is all up and running. Then I deploy my AS server, I configure ECS, and then I see whether I can actually load and interact with my workbook. And I'm a happy camper when that works. And then I go and download my MSI, and then I'm going to deploy my config tool. And then I just finish what needs to be finished. And among other things, we need to deploy our farm solution. That's here, this component. We also need to deploy our web application solutions, which are our WSPs that contain these things that you get to enable in your site collections. And here's the script tab, of course, for all the things. Every node switches you to the commands that we use, in case you want to script away. And as mentioned before in the introduction, there are reasons why SharePoint deployments can fail that are totally perfectly normal, such as when a SharePoint timer service isn't running on one of or multiple of your SharePoint servers, then this timer service will not pick the deployment job from the config database. right? A WSP deployment in SharePoint works like this. You run the commandlets, it takes this WSP and throws it into the config DB so that all the servers that run in your farm can pick it up from there and deploy it on their local machines. And again, I have a little article for you about that. I'm making heavy advertisement of my blog here. I get some good mileage out of this presentation. So here in this team blog of ours, we have an article where I say troubleshooting Power Pivot solution deployments. And here I show you, for example, an error where I intentionally stop the timer service, and then I go through the steps of looking at my solutions, looking at the status of the various solutions, looking at options at each level, what I could do, I could cancel the deployment, I could repeat it, and so forth. The command line often gives you more control over the solution deployment, more information, what's going really on. The user interface is a little bit scarce with the details. Yep, I already mentioned it. There's this one, our farm solution, that you need to deploy if you want to use our commandlets. You need to deploy it manually by using the standard SharePoint commandlets. And once you have that WSP deployed in your farm, then you can script, then you can just take our script and copy the commands and do with them whatever you need to do in your farm environments. And I showed you the config tool has the script tab where you can sneak peek and look at the tools. When you look at the SharePoint solution packages that we have in the SharePoint 2013 version versus the 2010 version, we have one more solution package now, which we didn't have before, which is this Power Pivot 14 farm solution thing. That is just a dummy package that we need to deploy because SharePoint 2013 supports both 14 mode and 15 mode. And if you don't deploy that package, then 14 mode is broken. The reason for that is that we need to write the GUIDs of our solutions into the content DBs. Otherwise, SharePoint is complaining. It doesn't contain any bits or anything. It just contains this one funny registration of our GUID. The actual solution package is still our farm solution. And then we have our web application solution, and that often also brings questions or you encounter certain issues with it. And that is, a web application solution is deployed to web applications. When you run our config tool in a configured farm environment, and you have multiple web applications, we're going to pick the first one and say, yeah, that's the one where we need to deploy. And we deploy. That means all other web applications don't get Power Pivot yet. You need to go into central administration and deploy the solutions there directly. I hope you all know where to go there. This is also the case when you deploy new web applications. New web applications don't automatically get these application solution packages. A typical error that you get when you don't have that is when you have a Power Pivot gallery that all of a sudden complains about assemblies not found. That is a classical indicator that you haven't deployed the web application solution package here to that web application in your SharePoint environment. And the other gotcha is if you create a site collection in a web application, that site collection then also needs to have the Power Pivot features activated. Well, you go to site settings, site collection administration, there's a section for activating the site collection features, and then you get this list where Power Pivot is one item and you need to click on that activate button to get all the goodies that we deploy in a SharePoint environment, such as the Power Pivot gallery. Okay, yeah. Well, I'm going to run over this because we only have 10 minutes left. I'm really heartbroken that I see. But I really want to go into more of the advanced scenarios still. Upgrade. If we have a new version or a patch, let's say we fix something and we issue a quick fix or a new service pack comes out, what do you need to do? You just need to deploy the bits. You install our MSI again on all the servers so that all the data provider files are updated, and then you run our config tool again because our config tool needs to deploy the new solution files that match the new assemblies on the files system. Make sense? If you deploy just the MSI, you only update the files on the file system, but the SharePoint configuration database still has the old assembly long names, the fully qualified names, and they have their version numbers in them. You need to update them too. so that these two match. Otherwise, your system isn't functioning anymore. And you do this very conveniently by running the config tool. It'll compare the versions, and it will automatically switch into this upgrade mode. And you only need to do this now on one server and re-update the farm. In 2010, you had to go to every PowerPivot server and do this over and over. OK, refreshes. Let's talk about the advanced features of PowerPivot in a farm in the last 10 minutes that we have. One of them, a real great one, is refreshing the workbook. So you interact with the data, but the data is now a week old or something, and you want to have actually the latest data. We have two ways you can accomplish this in Excel calculation services now. And the really great news is interactive data refresh actually works now. I'm not sure if you're all familiar with the fact that in SharePoint 2010, we are actually only pretending to refresh the data when you click refresh the data connection, because we don't ever send processing commands to the data model as part of that. Let me show you real quick what I'm talking about when we go to a PowerPivot workbook. Yeah, where's my mouse? There. So if I'm in a PowerPivot workbook here, let's grab this one, for example. Here on the data tab, you can say refresh connections, or if you have a pivot table selected, then it gives you also the option to refresh an individual connection. That doesn't work at all in SharePoint 2010. We only pretend. In SharePoint 2013, we did actually do the work to make this work in Excel calculation services. So if you click on that button with me, that would right now probably fail. If I click on here, it'll take some time, yes. It'll probably fail because I don't have the data sources here. The session timed out. Okay, I have to reload that first. Okay, let's go back in here. Refresh. Maybe it will work. Be careful. It can take some time. Yes. Now, what you've seen here now is, well, Excel services is now busy. But what's actually happening is I am the interactive user, and I tell ECS, go grab my identity and go to that model and send processing commands on my behalf to the actual data source that may be somewhere. Or in workbook could have multiple data sources, right? So how does ECS do that? It doesn't have my password. Well, ECS does first what it always does. It goes to the claims to Windows token service with Kerberos extensions, grabs my identity out of Active Directory. Now it has my local identity. And then it will take my username out of that and will stick that into a what we call out-of-line binding. So we construct a new processing command where we tell AAS, ignore all the data source definitions that you have in the model. I'm going to tell you what data source definition you're going to use for my processing command. And by the way, the user is this guy. And I'm not going to specify a password for you because I don't have a password. You'll figure that out on your own. And then ECS sends us this processing command into AAS. So AAS now gets a username. Hey, process that data model with that user, would you? So we also use Kerberos S4U extensions to take that username again, go to Active Directory and say, Active Directory, please give us that identity. But that dance requires that process to have the right act as part of the operating system. Not every application can go just to Active Directory and say, hey, give me an identity for user X, would you? I feel like acting like Steve Ballmer today. Right? So you need to have very high privileges on the machine to even have the capability to do this. And the right that you must have is act as part of the operating system. And if you grant a service account the right to act as part of the operating system, it is equal to running as local service. That's why on my AS machine here, if we go to my AS box, if I go into the services, jump down to a SQL. There it is. And if you look at my system configuration, this machine, even though I showed you that I initially configured some other box with network service, if you run with network service, that interactive data refresh will not work because that service account doesn't have the right to go to AD and grab an identity. If you have the possibility in your organization to run your service with local service or to grant a service account the act as part of the operating system, right, then you can enable that interactive data refresh scenario. You still then also need Kerberos constrained delegation between AS and that remote machine that actually does the data transfer. Right? You don't get out of these security requirements, but it is possible to configure these things then. But if your organization forbids you to run things with such high privileges, then, well, then you're out of luck and your users cannot use that interactive data refresh. And it seems to be working on my machine. It's still busy. It hasn't gotten an error. Okay, let's jump back to our presentation. So if interactive data refresh doesn't work, what else do you have in your arsenals? Well, you have still the scheduled data refresh. And scheduled data refresh is a different animal because the user provides us with a stored credential. When you configure a scheduled data refresh, a refresh schedule in the UI, maybe I can show that real quick, you get the ability to, do I have a gallery here somewhere real quick? No, that's the wrong one. So let me just take the current date. Here's a small, funny workbook that I have. And here I can say manage Power Pivot data refresh. If you're in a gallery, you have the refresh button. You can also configure a scheduled data refresh for any workbook. You get into the configuration page, hopefully coming up soon. I haven't really hit that. Oh, come on. Oh, it's doing its thing. It's also refreshing this other workbook, so it's a little bit slow. So you get the ability on the data connections to specify the credentials that you want to use for the refresh. We store these credentials in Secure Store, so it's secure. And in this scenario, we have a password, and life is good. When scheduled data refresh kicks in, the Power Pivot System Service instructs, there's our config page. You would basically say here, take this away. Here, for example, down here, you can say, use the default credentials that we have, or use a user account. And here you can specify your own user account if you want and pencil in your password. And we store this in Secure Store. And then our refresh routines can read the credentials. We have the password. And instead of doing this S4U dance, we do a Windows logon. And with the Windows logon, we have the full identity. And then we can refresh on your behalf. So this is the main difference between an interactive data refresh. To me, it means no password versus a scheduled data refresh. To me, that means we do have a password. How does the scheduled data refresh work? System services are workhorse. We have a timer job that kicks in every minute. And it says, system service, please check whether a workbook needs to be refreshed. The system service goes into our AppDB. We have a table there called work queue. Let me show you. And I'm very proud about that because we made it really easy to hack that table. In the 2010 timeframe, a number of customers wanted to go and actually run scheduled data refresh with a finer granularity than what we offer. We offer as a smallest interval daily, and some customers wanted to run it hourly and all these things, but we don't feel comfortable giving this as a default option to every user. Imagine then every user does an hourly refresh of 10 workbooks or something. The farm administrators wouldn't be happy campers then. So here we have somewhere a Power Pivot application DB. And in here we have our tables. And in here we have a work queue table. There. And, pardon? Oh, why don't you tell me? You're totally flying blind. So, while I was demoing for myself personally, I opened SMS, connected to the DB server, went into my service app DB, and there's my data refresh.work queue table. And that table really has let me just do a select. And that should give me what I need. I probably don't have a scheduled data refresh configured, so that will be empty. But you can see here what this table would look like. And it has two fields in it, start date and start time. If you want a workbook on-demand refresh, just set these two fields to now. And the next time minute, when the timer job kicks in, the system service will pick the workbook up and refresh it for you. And we did that intentionally so that you have it easier to build some custom solutions if you really, really need to go down that route. If you don't need to go down that route, then just use what we provide. Our user interface never touches the service app DB. The user does not need access permissions on the DB. They always go through the system service, which acts on behalf of the user and writes the permissions on the app DB, therefore, are just for the service account. If you change the service account, make sure that you check that the app DB permissions are also updated. Sometimes this is not the case, and then the system service will complain that it doesn't have access anymore. Yeah, and then we just go, and hopefully you have the data providers on the AS server that you need to actually go to the data sources that your users import. That is also not always the case. For example, if the user imports from a CSV file, PowerPivot and Excel use the ACE provider for that. That ACE provider is not supported in server environments, so most likely you don't have that data provider on that server then, and then data refresh will fail. And the user will get that error in the refresh history. The administrator will also, well, I already showed the UI, let's go through that one. The data refresh history will also be exposed to the farm administrator as part of our management dashboard. We have a management dashboard inside of SharePoint. Let me show you that real quick. You can see that now, yes. So let's go to the app server. In here, we have the management dashboard. This management dashboard is directly embedded in central administration when you have our PowerPivot and it deployed. And the first thing that you can see is your server health, where you can get answers about how busy is my server. For example, you can see here, what's it look like with my CPU? My server shouldn't be too busy. Yeah, of course, I didn't refresh it for some time, so that is again. Hey, that doesn't look so good. Oh, I forgot to rename my key again out of the registry. We are a bit out of time. I'm not going to do that rename back. Unfortunately, I can't switch back to that table anymore. But you can see here, this is the PowerPivot management dashboard right there, the link. We show you server health statistics. We show you workbook statistics, like how many users work with a workbook, and we show you the data refresh statistics so that you can see what data sources the users have in their workbooks that might be important for governance reasons, for example. And we also show you the refresh failures. You can then see, you know, what workbooks actually don't refresh successfully. We also have a feature in our stack that if a workbook continuously fails, you can specify that in the system configuration. You can say after 10 recurring failures, just stop refreshing this connection because it doesn't make sense to waste these resources on that refresh attempt. And then we just don't refresh it anymore. And this, so if you have it refreshing on daily and you have 10 as the default, then after 10 days, we don't try to refresh it anymore. And the other setting that we have is if you refresh a workbook daily and no user looks at it, then maybe it's not very useful to refresh this thing daily. So we have also a setting that says, if no user looks at the workbook within 10 refresh cycles, just stop refreshing it. That has, of course, the caveat that when the user eventually looks at it again, he will see at first old data. So you can balance that decision whether you want that enabled or not. By default, it is enabled, and the default value is 10. And the way to configure this is in the PowerPivot system configuration section in central admin, which I cannot show you right now because I corrupted my farm. So this is pretty much the end of the presentation. You guys have any questions? There was a question before. I guess that person has left already. Okay. Yeah, then thank you very much for your attendance. I hope you enjoyed the session. It was a bit... Troubleshooting tools, maybe that is also of interest for you guys. What do I usually work with is ULS Viewer. And then we also have Fiddler, this HTTP proxy is very useful. You can put Fiddler in between your SharePoint server and then you see what's going on there on that one. And a very common tool for us is SQL Profiler, where we can see what commands is ECS really sending the server. If you see a command come in and the server rejects it with no access, you know, hey, server had no permissions. Yeah, and then there's a variety of blogs. The team blog is, of course, the one that I'm using, but there are also other independent blogs that write about SharePoint. I encourage you to check them out. They have quite some useful stuff. Some blog articles may be about the old technology, but to some degree, things also still pertain to the new version. We didn't change all the architecture, just the Excel services way of loading the models. And here are some more tracks that you might want to put on your calendar if you are interested in the BI track here at TechEd. And where is my reporting services in here? Yep. Where do we have it? I guess that one I didn't put in. This is a repetition. Yep. So here then also this session is recorded and will be available for download after the conference. And the last slide is, please don't forget to evaluate the session and enter to win. Thank you very much.